Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks Saturday, June 7th, 2014. This is episode 1089. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcasts are brought to you by RingCentral. The cloud-based phone system we use just got better with the launch of Meetings, the full-service video conference feature. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral starts at just $25 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to 20 phones total. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. And buy Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Apple or Android device is worth at gazelle.com. And by Hover.com. Hover is the best way to buy and manage domain names. It's simple, honest, and easy to use. For 10% off your first purchase, go to Hover.com and enter the promo code TTG6. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, smartphones, home theater, all that jazz. In fact, our home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson, comes in here about 33 and a third after the hour. We're going to have some fun in the next hour. Our travel guru, Johnny Jett, will be in studio. He actually traveled to the Brick House Studios, our Tech Guy Labs, and we'll be sitting in that chair. I've got a chair set up just for him. Isn't that exciting? So, Johnny Jett.
He's going to be here?
Like, in studio.
Oh, my God. I'll meet him for real for the first time.
Yeah. I've met him.
You know
but
him.
I've known him.
I'm still but a little late to the Johnny Jett game.
It'll be exciting.
Yeah. I'm so excited.
Yeah. We also will take calls at 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can call with Skype if you're outside those two countries. 888-827-5536. Website techguylabs.com. Apple keeps doing it. Last week, they bought Beats, even though I said they shouldn't. They didn't listen to me. I don't know why. And this week, they had a big event on Monday, the Worldwide Developers Conference, a big speech for developers, 2 hours, jam-packed. You know, sometimes Apple, at these events, does a little congratulatory stroll through the Apple accounts sheets and, you know, look how great we're doing. Then they didn't waste any time. They talked a little bit about how many people use iOS. Turns out 800 million people use iOS. 200 million iPads, 600 million iPhones sold. I guess, actually, that's not... There was a little number fudging going on. And while that's not an inaccurate number, I guess we should explain that that's total since 2007... Presumably, many of those people have had several devices. So that's how many devices they've sold. It didn't say how many people are actually using it today. They called Android a toxic hellstew. That was notable. Whoa. This was kind of a new Apple. I think this was Tim Cook kind of coming out from under Steve Jobs' shadows and saying, hey, I'm here to play. Take that, Android. Boom, boom. Take that, Microsoft. And they did announce some really exciting stuff. I'm actually, unlike some pundits who said, oh, it's just the usual hee-haw from Apple, I'm pretty excited about some of the things they talked about. They're gonna support a home automation using iOS, which makes sense. They've got the technologies. And I think home automation is cool, but I've always avoided it because nothing talks to anything else. My Hue lights don't talk to my Sonos music player. It'd be great if Apple could unite this all. My door lock. In fact, they said what we're going to do in the new iPhone, you'll be able to say, hey, Siri, which, by the way, that's cool. Something Motorola's done for a while, but new to the iPhone. You don't have to touch the phone. You just go, hey, Siri. And you'll be able to say things like, hey, Siri, good night. And Siri will dim the lights, close the garage door, make sure the doors are locked, and put everybody to bed. I think that's cool. They talked about their new health stuff. We still don't know what that's going to tie to. It's something called Health, an application that'll be on iOS 8. They kind of took aim at Google a lot. In fact, most of the new technologies are stuff that Google does or has sort of done. But it's now all under the Apple roof. And that's, I think, a good time to do this. I think we've seen this on the show. People are nervous about how much Google knows about us. And, of course, Google knows more all the time. And if you use an Android device, really your life is an open book to Google. And that's not bothered me particularly, although it does bother some. Violet Blue, who is a columnist, a privacy and security columnist for ZDNet, wrote a very strongly worded article, which came out, I guess, today. Thanks for nothing, jerk face, is the title of the article, in which he blames Google founder Sergey Brin for the woes of the world. Now, it's an opinion piece, and I'm not sure I fully agree with her, but she raises some interesting points. She says, you made us all use Google Plus in 2011. You said this is the future of Google. And then apparently, at an event this week, Sergey said, you know, I'm kind of a weirdo, and it was probably a mistake for me to be working on anything tangentially related to social networking to begin with. He was, by the way, the guy who kind of did Google Plus. That was his thing. And so she goes on and on about how Google really just sees you as a... let me see if I could find this phrase that she uses, because it's pretty strong. She says, Google sees us as little more than webs of flesh spun over packages of saleable data. Oh, come on. I mean, yes, that's true. I know, but I'm sure, you know, Google's made of people. It's not some, you know, Skynet, or is it? It's not some robotic machine that is that doesn't like people. It's made of people. I think what's interesting is that there's a little bit of a backlash going on. But remember, this is the deal we made. Maybe not implicitly, maybe not explicitly. Definitely implicitly, maybe not explicitly. That we will, let's use Facebook as an example. We will get this great free service, and in return, the way we pay for it, because nothing's free. You know, you can't buy a house for free. You can't ride in a cab for free. You can't go to the grocery store and load up for free. You've got to pay for these things. The way we pay for the internet, a lot of the stuff we use on the internet is with our information and our attention, because they use the information, what they know about us, to sell ads, and then we pay attention to those. So it's our information and our attention. And that's how Facebook works. And if you don't like it, I guess you shouldn't make the deal, right? You should say, well, I'm just not going to use Facebook. There's been a growing sentiment that way, certainly. And maybe people are saying the same thing about Google. The problem with Google is a little more tightly woven into the fabric of the net, isn't it? It's hard not to use Google. You can use a different search engine like DuckDuckGo. But it's not quite as satisfying as Google. And if you want to use YouTube, or, you know, there's so many services that Google provides, it's hard to avoid them. But you could do it if you pay attention. Otherwise, you're going to give them that information. Now, so here's what Apple's offering, which I think is very interesting. Apple's saying, we will, and this is true, by the way, not just on iPhones and iPads, but on Macintosh desktops, on computers and laptops, on computers too. We will do the search for you. When you ask Siri, how tall is the Empire State Building? Siri may well go out to Google and do a Google search to give you the answer. But Siri will do it as Siri, as Apple, not as you. So Google gets nothing about you. Only Apple knows about you. Only Apple knows you made that search. And Apple's proposition, I think you're going to see this more and more. Apple will develop this storyline more and more. Apple's proposition is, hey, we sell hardware. We don't sell advertising. They do, but pretend they don't. We don't sell their advertising doesn't work, so they don't. They make no money on it. We protect you. We protect your privacy. So trust us with all of that information, with Siri, with the stuff that Siri knows about you, with your fingerprints, with with your personal information. And then when you do a search on the Macintosh desktop, we'll go out and get the information, bring it back to you, and no one will know that you were looking for that. Apple will let you use DuckDuckGo with Safari. You can change that, but that's not really anything new. You could always do that. It's just easier. I think this is all theater. This is all window dressing. The real proposition is, hey, trust us. You don't trust Google, but you don't trust Facebook, but you could trust us. Can you? How do you feel about that? Maybe you don't trust anybody. You know, if you're on the internet, everyone knows you're a dog. 8888-ASK-LEO. Let's talk about it. I'll answer your questions too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm surprised Joan Jett wasn't at this concert. Every other 80s band was.
That would have been cool.
Heart was good.
Oh, yeah?
Heart was great. And Bare Naked Ladies, the band, not the thing, I love. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking about the rock festival I went to over the last weekend. No Joan Jett, though. Heather Hammond is here. Hammond, 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 Hammond. I'm going to call you that. Heather Hammond, Hammond, Hammond.
Oh.
Is that the first?
Okay.
Dr. Dean do that to you ever?
No.
Well, he was classy.
Start this. My bosses seem to just call me by my last name. Hammond.
Hammond.
I guess when they're yelling at me.
I think Hammond is too soft a name to yell. Not enough consonants. He's more consonants. We have a new guy here named Needles. I'm looking forward to yelling. You'll hear me go, Needles, get in here.
Does have a good ring.
Yeah, doesn't it? Hammond is like, it sounds like you're maybe clearing your throat. Heather, your job, should you decide to accept it, is to answer the phones when they ring, to carefully groom the callers. If they have a hair out of place, you fix that and then prepare them for their debut on nationwide radio.
You've made my little chickadees nervous now.
Do you tell them? I always do. Oh, there's just you and me. There's nobody listening.
Right, right. Yeah. It's just us. Like talking on the phone.
Just us Freds.
It's tech support.
Yeah. Think of it as tech support, only I'm not in India. It's perfect.
Exactly.
So who should I see you've lined up some wonderful calls here.
Since this is your first day back after a weekend off,
yes.
I'm going to lob a softball to you from Todd in Santa Monica.
I love the softballs. Thank you, Heather Hammond. Hello, Todd. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm many hairs out of place here, unfortunately.
Well, it's radio. You don't have to put your pants on. It's
thank
okay.
Goodness.
Just relax.
Thank you.
Yes.
Like most changes, this comes on the heels of a near disaster. I work regularly on three different computers in three different locations. I have a PC at home and a PC at work, and I have a laptop that I lug around. I'm constantly working, you know, in different places, but on the same sort of sets of files.
Right.
PowerPoint and Word and all the usual stuff.
This is why the cloud exists.
Aha. That's, I think, where we're going, into the clouds.
Into the cloud.
Now, I'm religious about saving and backing up. So at any given time, there's a current copy on wherever I'm working, plus on my trusty flash drive that I've been lugging around. And so there's always two copies. That flash drive finally gave up the ghost a couple of weeks ago. I took it in, and the guy was able to retrieve most of the stuff, fortunately. And so I've got that stuff. But it made me think about a smarter way to work with this. And I had started using Google Docs for some kinds of work.
That has one advantage. It's free.
Yes, it is free.
But it's not as complete as PowerPoint and Word.
And so I only use it for certain things. And then when I need to get serious with those documents, then I dump them into Word or PowerPoint or Excel or whatever.
I think you need to really look at Office 365, Microsoft's cloud-based version of Office. You get a local version as well, which is really nice. Because one of the negative on the cloud is when you're not online, your documents are unavailable.
Exactly.
And nobody really wants that. So what you really want is a solution that keeps documents locally and in the cloud.
Yeah.
And some people use Dropbox or similar solutions. What that does, I use something called the File Transporter, which I really like.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same idea. you have a, somewhere, the reason we call it a cloud is because when architects are drawing the internet, they just usually do a puffy little cloud because it's a, you don't know what it is. It's just out there somewhere, right?
Yeah.
It's in the air. But what it really is somewhere is a server with a hard drive, looks just like your computer, and your stuff's on it. And if the internet connection doesn't work, well, then you don't have access to your stuff.
Yeah.
So Dropbox and Transporter, and there are other solutions like this, do one way of solving this is they do keep a copy of your stuff on that, in that puffy little cloud, but they also keep a copy on your computer, and then they synchronize them.
Ah.
Now, there's a negative to that. Keeping your copy in the cloud means you only have one authoritative copy. If you keep copies on your drive and in the cloud, you could see one scenario that's not so good. You modify it on one computer, then you go to another computer and modify it, and now the systems don't know which is the authoritative copy. So what it will do is create a new conflicted copy, and you'll have multiple copies of the same file in the cloud.
Wouldn't the most... So I modify a document...
It can't do it by most recent because... You've modified them individually, and it might be that the earlier you can't save both modifications. So if, let's say, you're an author, you've written a brilliant paragraph, and then you go to another computer, write another brilliant paragraph. If it throws out the first paragraph, you might be irked, even though it's earlier.
Wouldn't the sync, though, take care of and just keep things current?
If it happens in a timely enough fashion. But that can also. But if it doesn't, if it hasn't synced yet, that's when you get the conflicted copy. Now, Dropbox will handle that by and Transporter and all these other solutions by making an extra file, and it'll be named conflicted copy. So then you, as the author, can go and say, "Well, I want to save this one, but not that one." So that's fine. That's just one negative side effect. The nice thing about fully cloud, and Google Drive does this, is because it's stored in the cloud. There's that one authoritative copy. You don't have to worry about conflicts. You're always working on that one, not the local copy.
So the downside of Google Drive is the requirement for the internet connection.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, they have offline, but it's not perfect, blah, blah, blah. I would look, I mean, since you use Microsoft Office, what Microsoft wants you to do now is subscribe. And it's fairly affordable. It's as little as $8 a month, which is a lot less than buying Office. And you have it can save locally or it could save the cloud. It can do both.
That's $365?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it has a web-based version, so you don't even have to – you can install it on up to 5 computers if you get the enterprise version, which is really nice. And you can use a browser on anything, including an iPad, to look at it. Or to edit it, to modify it. And the browser version isn't as complete as the desktop version, but it's pretty darn complete. A lot nicer than Google Docs. So this is, I think, for somebody like you that is using Office as their tool, then I would absolutely look at the latest Microsoft Office. That's what I use. And it gives you the best of both worlds. You have a cloud version.
Right.
In fact, I think when it's first installed, it saves to the cloud by default. You'll get the latest version. Which is nice, and it's always there. They have a home version and a business version. You'll see the differences. Depends on the apps you get and so forth, and how many installs you can make, and all of that stuff.
Let me clarify something. Go back to my last question, which is, if the syncing doesn't happen in time, you could conceivably alter two different happen constantly.
Right. It does, but it doesn't. But it can happen that you get conflicted copies. You're right; it does happen constantly.
Okay.
But you said you have a laptop and a desktop. It's not so far fetched. You'd be working on a document on the desktop, and you go sit down at the breakfast table with the laptop.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. No, there's usually big, giant lags of time between.
Well, you should look at Dropbox, and that's also a good alternative. But I think, given you're using Office, that's the sensible way to go. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Actually, OneDrive does the syncing, too, so it seems to me a good way to do this, frankly. Now, I've been really liking File Transporter because I don't – here's another example. If you don't trust Dropbox, and we know that Dropbox has your keys, so can offer up your data to any police agency that wants it. This thing I have one at the office. They're $99, and there's no monthly fee. I have one here and one at home. And they synchronize between each other, so they're off-site backup. and they synchronize with the computers. And it's worked quite well for me. And you can, I have like 3 terabytes of storage on each of them. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater guy.
Woohoo!
And we were talking during the break, before we came back, about I upgraded to Comcast Business because they said no caps. It's expensive. You pay for it. And no bandwidth shaping. So I noticed all of a sudden Netflix just seems to work great.
Funny how that works.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
But you mentioned that Comcast says all of its customers will have bandwidth caps in the next 4 years.
Yeah, but as you pointed out, that's probably consumer,
home users. Yeah.
Home users, not business users.
You know, one way out of the net neutrality debate is, we had a really interesting debate a couple of weeks ago with a guy named Brett Glass, who runs a wireless internet service provider in Laramie, Wyoming. And because he's wireless, it's very expensive for him to get his bandwidth, because he's in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And he doesn't feel he can pass the costs along to his customers. So his proposal was he should charge me and Google and everybody for access to his customers. And that's, of course, the debate. My opinion is one of the solutions to this is if companies charge what it costs to their customers, then customers will have a choice. And if you are willing to pay for unshaped, unthrottled bandwidth, unlimited bandwidth, then you should get it.
Yeah.
Now, how much does that cost, I guess, is the question.
Yeah.
But isn't this all about at bottom getting Comcast getting as, you know, much money as it can?
Well, isn't that what the goal of business is to begin with? I mean,
yeah. Unfortunately, market forces are what keeps it honest, right? Because if demand goes up, the price goes up. If demand goes down, the price goes down. And the idea is if there's competition and you had 5 or 6 people saying, we're going to give you a better deal, that brings the price down to a fair price, I think, for everybody, both for the company, because the company needs to survive, obviously can't sell it at below cost, and for the consumer. Unfortunately, in the internet, I just found this out from John Oliver's show, which is a comedy show, but 96...
Yeah, but sometimes you get the best news from those shows.
Sometimes that's where the facts come. 96% of Americans only have, at best, 2 choices for internet service.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That's the problem is, you know, you only have 1 or 2 cable companies.
Every town has 1 cable company and generally 1 phone company, and that's their choice.
Right, and that's it. And that is not competition. So the forces, the market forces that you were talking about can't really work.
Yeah. So we can't, because we got nowhere to go. They got a monopoly. Or a duopoly.
Right. You could go to AT&T, UVerse, or Verizon Fios if they have the infrastructure installed in your neighborhood, which they don't everywhere.
Right. Well, anyway, I'm paying a lot. I don't even know how much. I think it's...
But Netflix is working really good. And believe me, when you get a 4K TV and you start streaming House of Cards in 4K or whatever, you're going to be really glad you don't have bandwidth shaping or data caps or anything, because that's going to be a lot of data.
I think that's what Comcast is basically saying. In the next 4 years, as you want to watch richer TV, we're going to put some caps on that.
Yeah.
Or they could just install more equipment and charges, you know, make it financially viable.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, you have some questions from your listeners. We should mention that Scott is the editor-in-chief of the AVS Forum, where they talk about audio, video, home theater, and I imagine a little bit about Netflix and data caps.
Oh, a lot about that. Yeah, absolutely.
What are they asking you these days?
Well, I got a couple questions here I thought I would mention from the Cubs man. he and his wife have a Sony XBR TV, the HX909 series, which is 2 or 3 years old now. And they got it. They thought it's really great. It's a 1080p TV. And they're considering a jump up to a 4K TV, the Sony XBR X850A, which is last year's 4K or UHD, Ultra HD TV. And he asks, wondering if I know much about that model. Should they make the switch? I say no. I think the 909, the HX909, which has, they're both LCD TVs, and they have a technology, an illumination technology called, they're using LEDs. And the 909 has a technology called full array local dimming, or FALD, FALD. And what that means is you've got all these LEDs behind the screen, behind the LCD screen, that are pumping light directly through the screen and out to you. And different zones within that array can be dimmed or brightened independently, which increases the contrast that you see on the screen. It makes a beautiful picture. It's really a superior technology to the one that the 850 uses, the one they're thinking about going to, which has LEDs only around the edges of the screen.
Isn't that how most people do it now, though?
Most TVs edge do it that way.
Edge right. lit, they call it? Yeah.
They call it edge lit, exactly. And it's less expensive to make. It allows the TV to be thinner, which seems to be a really important factor to a lot of people. To me, picture quality is the most important factor. And I don't care if it's, you know, an inch thick or a quarter of an inch thick. Doesn't make any difference to me. But it seems to a lot of people. So, and it's cheaper to make, so the TVs can be cheaper. So most TVs are edge lit. Now, some companies do it better than others, and Sony actually does it pretty well. Samsung is another one that does it pretty well. But you and they claim to be able to do local dimming, which means, again, making certain parts of the image darker and certain parts brighter, depending on what that image looks like on the screen. And it dynamically changes as the image changes. But they can't do true local dimming. Another problem with edge lighting is that the screen uniformity, the illumination uniformity on the screen is not good generally, especially if you're watching a movie with letterbox bars top and bottom. You'll get this thing called flash lighting, which makes the letterbox bars look like there's kind of somebody shining a flashlight on them, so the corners look lighter than the middle of the letterbox bar. Doesn't look very good. So backlighting, far better than edge lighting. 4K TV, a lot of companies are selling 4K TVs, but they're not ready yet. I mean, they are, but the only thing that's different about them compared to current TVs is the resolution. You get four times the number of pixels on the screen, which makes no difference whatsoever if you're sitting at a normal distance away from a normal size TV. They're talking about a 52 or a 65-inch TV, which if you're sitting 10 feet away from that, you are not going to see the difference in resolution, in detail, between 1080p and what's called 4K or UHD, which has four times the number of pixels. But your eye isn't sensitive enough to the finer resolution to be able to see it. There are other aspects of 4K TV that are coming down the pike. I'm going to New York at the end of this month to talk about that at a conference, where things like dynamic range, the difference between the darkest and lightest parts of the image, color gamut, how many colors can it represent, those sorts of things are going to make much more difference in the picture quality that you can see easily from your normal seating distance. So on a normal size TV. Now, when you get up to a 100-inch TV or a projector, more likely, or a 150-inch projected image, then 4K resolution might very well make a difference by itself. But there are other aspects of the 4K TV system that haven't been finalized yet. And until they are, I have a hard time recommending that people buy a 4K TV. In this particular case, I really don't recommend it because the HX909 with its full array backlighting, local dimming lighting system just works great. So to the Cubs man, I definitely say, hang on to what you got. Wait two or three more years when 4K really settles down, then go that way.
Scott Wilkinson, home theater guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. All right. You want to talk some more?
I'd be happy to.
All right.
I'm always happy.
I'll let you talk some more.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Wiggs in the chat room says, I have a 28-inch TV now. It's getting hard to read text on the screen from 10 feet away. Yeah, well, it would be for me, too. I'm assuming 39 to 42 inch TV would be a lot better for text. Yes, it would. But from 10 feet away for text, sure. It becomes a computer monitor then. But if you're watching movies or TV shows, I would get even bigger than that if you can. From 10 feet away, believe it or not, the ideal screen size for high definition is 70 inches. Now that's, that's probably bigger than you want to get or maybe can accommodate. But I would certainly go at least 42. I'd probably go at least 50 and 65 if you can. And TVs of that size are you know, not that terribly expensive these days. Vizio makes some really good ones. Somebody in the chat room mentioned something else. Another 65-incher that was at Costco. I couldn't remember. But anyway, it's... I would go certainly bigger if you could. Thanks, Mick. I really appreciate that. this date and time. Oh, I timed it perfectly. Yeah, how about that? I wasn't even planning. I just heard the music just as I was finishing a sentence, and I love when that happens. ooh, good question. M. Heiss. Mike Heiss, my buddy, is in the chat room. He's been on the podcast before. He says, don't buy the 2013 Sony 4K sets as they do not have HEVC. Very good point, Mike. Thanks for bringing that up. HEVC stands for High Efficiency Video Codec. It's the next generation of compression algorithms for video, and it's what's going to be used most likely on 4K content coming from Netflix or where someplace online, which is where it's going to come from first. and the TV has to have that codec in it in order to receive and decode that content. Like, for example, Netflix House of Cards in 4K. The 2013 TVs do not have that codec in them, the 2013 Sonys anyway. The 2014s do, and this the guy that wrote me this comment was actually asking about a 2013, the X850A. Now, the X850B, which is the next generation, 2014 set, does have HEVC, but it's still edge lit. It's still LED edge lit. So, you know, I always prefer backlight, true backlight with local dimming. Let's see. The screen name is unpronounceable. Do you recommend HDMI switch that is a box or a dongle? Well, I can't imagine how you could have an HDMI switch that's a dongle because you need room for several HDMI connector ports. So I guess I don't quite see how that would be possible in a dongle. Certainly a box, that's probably what I would look for. The Sue the Writer popped in to say hi. Hi, Sue. How you doing? Good to see you. Red Penguin is saying good luck on TTG. Yeah, I'm going to be filling in for Leo on the 4th of July weekend, July 5th and 6th, for the whole show. Looking forward to that tremendously. I think we're going to have a wonderful time. Loves to Chew asks, do I think HDR, high dynamic range, has a good future ahead? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's at least four companies working on it. And by this, I mentioned this on the show, the difference between the darkest and the lightest parts of the image, I'll have to tell you about after the next segment.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I just love this song. It's laid-back music. It's relaxed. It's dad music. That's what it is, isn't it, Heather? That's what it is. That's why I like it. Andre, Newhall, California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Andre.
Hey, Leo. It's really a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. What can I do for you?
You know, real quick, first, I got to tell you, my cell phone, my wife's cell phone, our laptop, our desktop, our Carbonite, everything, it's all based on your recommendations. It's such a great guidance in this digital age.
I hope you're happy with all that stuff.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. I'm always nervous when people say, I bought it because you recommended it. I'm waiting for the other shoe. And you fool you. Oh, good. Well, I'm glad you like it all.
Yes, definitely. Okay. And then the question that I had was, me and my friend, we just started a Dragon Ball Z podcast.
Awesome. Is Dragon Ball Z still a thing?
You know what? I don't know if it's as big as it was before, but it's definitely still alive.
It's a Japanese anime show, right?
Yes, that's correct. It's timeless. It's a masterpiece.
Well, then I think you're the right guy to do the show. That's for sure. That's for sure. I think there's more than one, believe it or not, Dragon Ball Z shows, aren't there?
Yeah, that's the thing that we wanted to ask you. There's two major podcasts, and when we type in Google something like DBZ podcast or Dragon Ball Z podcast,
they show up. Yeah, because they've been around longer.
Exactly. Yeah. And then under them, there's a bunch of like mirrors and their iTunes feed and those kind of things. All we want is just to get on the first page somewhere, or maybe at least on the second page below there. Well, they're just like repeats of those guys' sites.
You will. You will. Let me tell you how Google works, basically. I mean, but because you're new, you don't have a lot of people linking to you yet. So the key is every show, you make sure you say to your listeners, hey, and if you like the show, do us a favor, link to us from your blog, your website, let everybody know you watch the show. And that's what Google is counting. Google algorithm is called PageRank, which is a kind of a pun because Larry Page wrote it, one of the founders of Google, and it also ranks your page. And the way it does it is essentially unchanged. There's lots of finesses, but it's essentially unchanged since the earliest days, which is it will rank you higher depending on how many highly ranked sites link to you. And we call this the highly ranked sites. We say they have Google juice. They can use their Google juice to your benefit. Now, what you don't want to do, Google juice, what you don't want to do is make what they call inorganic links. That is, pay people or get people to link to you from link farms. Or you want real sites with real viewers who have real Google juice to link to you organically because they like you. That's what the other podcast has done. And over time, that happens. And you go up in the ranks. When you're brand new, you can't expect to be found right away. You, of course, have to make sure that Google... You have a site? Do you have a site?
Yes, we do.
What's the site?
It's dbzism.net.
dbzism?
Yes, correct.
.net. Good. I love it. Okay, so that's the first thing. You got to have a website, right? Because otherwise, how are they going to, what's Google going to find? But you should also have a Twitter account. You want to play off this DBZism, but you also want to make sure that you mention Dragon Ball Z everywhere. Because Google will use keywords. You want to show up in, well, ideally, I would guess if somebody searched for Dragon Ball Z podcast, you would show up, right? That's what you want.
Exactly. Just even on the bottom of the first page.
No, I understand. I understand. And you don't get to specify, but you'll go up the page rank. Make sure you use Dragon Ball Z and podcast in everything, on your Twitter account, on your Facebook account. Be sure you have a Google Plus account. And you always use Dragon Ball Z and podcast wherever you, because that's what they're going to match you up with, right? And eventually you will slowly rise up through the ranks. But you've got to be careful because Google's very sensitive to people who try to game the search results. They want their search results to reflect natural interest, the quality of the product. So if you ask them, they'll say, just make great content. And I guess at the bottom line is that that's going to help. But you've only done two podcasts. You can't expect to be on the top of the search results. But you should be number two right after the older one. And that should happen quickly. The only reason they have many results on the first page is there's no one else. Now there is. So you just get people to link to you. Make sure that Google is indexing your site. And one way to find out is to go to Google's webmaster tools. In fact, this is a good thing for anybody who runs a website to understand what Google is doing. What are they thinking? They make videos. My friend Matt Cutts, who is in charge of fighting spam in the search results, makes some wonderful webmaster videos. If you go to google.com/webmasters, they have lots of information there. I mean, the tagline is, you want to be found on the web, we want to help. And so, you know, read this, get educated, because it is important. You do not need to go out and hire what they call an SEO, search engine optimization guru. Generally, anything that really matters, you can do. There's no secrets. And sometimes hiring an SEO can backfire on you. If you hire somebody to do this for you, they may do things that are a little more shady than you would like. And if they do, then, well, that's a problem. Because then you're faced with this issue of Google perhaps even banning you or penalizing you. And this happens, I'm afraid, way too often. So we don't want that to happen. Read the docs. Google does make it easy to figure out what they're doing. And good luck. Dan, Northridge, Leo Laporte. Northridge, Florida, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Leo. Awesome show.
Thank you.
I recently began using Google Chrome, and I have three quick questions about it.
Sure.
First of all, when I try to add some extensions and use them, I get this warning box telling me it can access my data on all websites and also access the tabs and browsing activity. What exactly does that mean?
This is true of any browser anyway, and this maybe is a little bit overzealous. Here in the state of California, they passed a proposition called Prop 65 some years ago that had to warn you if any any chemicals known to cause cancer were present in the area, which means this warning is on every building. It's everywhere you go. It's lost its meaning. We all laugh about the Prop 65 warning because it turns out this is, you know, if there's gas exhaust, that's known to cause cancer. So this is like that. First, you should understand, your browser knows everything, right? Your internet service provider also knows everything, by the way. What they're telling you is if you install an extension, because it's now knit into the browser, it will also know everything. And the warning that's important is it can send anything that it knows back to the home office. So you should only, first of all, very important, only get browser extensions from the browser company, from Google or from Mozilla. They both have stores where you can get extensions. They're mostly free. Get them from there.
Okay.
Because they vet them, they test them, they make sure they're safe. And then best to get one that's widely used, has positive reviews, comes from a well-known company. All of those things sort of protect you. But it is, I think, appropriate to understand that information is leaked every time you use a browser. Information about who you are, where you are, that kind of thing. And the extensions get that too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Great googly moogly. I think it might predate Zappa. Of course, I'm aware of the Zappa song, but I think it may also come from, it seems like an old-time radio thing to me.
Yeah, I've heard it on TV. I can hear some character going, "Great googly moogly."
Well, I think it's a play. You know, Frank Zappa was a weirdo, but I think it's he's one of
yeah,
my.
Yeah, but a genius.
Yeah, I mean, you know him. I mean, he's one of the great musicians of our time. Was.
Oh yeah, no kidding.
And his son Dweezil and his daughter Moon Unit carry on his tradition of strangeness.
Indeed.
Apparently, Dweezil. Anyway, your turn. Go ahead. Take it over. Take it over.
Thank you. I will just say about Frank Zappa that when I was in high school, I had a friend who was a trumpet player. We were in the jazz band, and he actually transcribed Peaches and Regalia.
Wow!
For big band, he wrote it down from listening to it on the record, and arranged it for big band, and we played it in the big band, and he was an amazing musician, really. We have been talking in the chat room about Samsung's curved screens. Now, Leo, I know Leo has a curved screen OLED, which looks fabulous. I mean, the picture quality cannot be faulted. It is a fabulous, fabulous picture quality. But Samsung is betting the farm on curved screens. They make flat screens too, but all their high-end screens are curved, and they're starting to come out with all these commercials for curved screens. They're really pushing it hard. LG less so, and nobody else. And so that leads me to wonder, I don't like the concept except when it's in a gigantic screen. You know, if it's 100-inch. We saw at CES a couple of 105-inch ultra-wide LCD TVs that were curved, again, from LG and Samsung. Toshiba had one too, and it was flat. So this was kind of interesting. But, you know, in a big giant screen, it makes some sense. But in a smaller screen, it tends to encourage solitary viewing, because if you're off to the sides a little bit, the geometry of the screen is all weird. So But home theater to me is supposed to be, well, generally speaking, a communal experience, a family experience. So that's why I prefer flat screens generally. Loves to choose says, I want a 360 that follows you around the house. A 360 degree screen. Anybody remember at Disneyland, the there was a theater, a stand up theater. You walked in there and you stood up and it had a 360 degree screen around you. I thought that was kind of cool. Yeah, Logan 5 says curved screen so the window's glare can be seen at all angles. The glare, the reflection off of a curved screen is different than it is off of a flat screen, no question. Diego Kidd, did I ever play a Captain Beefheart transcription in a big band? No, I didn't. We did play, this guy transcribed Peaches and Regalia. He also transcribed from the Don Ellis Big Band, Bulgarian Bulge, which is a tune in, dig this, 35/16 time. Those of you who are musicians might understand that. It's a Bulgarian, based on a Bulgarian folk song with a very weird off-kilter time signature. He wrote down every single note. It was amazing. And we got the band to play it. I couldn't believe that either. It was because it's really hard. Anyway, be that as it may, anybody else have anything to talk about? I've certainly got plenty of things to say myself. Didn't play Captain Beefheart. Yes, it is a bizarre time signature clip, Kyle, even for progressive rock. Exactly right. And Fushigi recognizes the name Don Ellis. He's been dead for a long time, but I used to listen to him in high school all the time. He made famous, he had a trumpet that he had modified to play quarter tones, right? So half tones are the distance in pitch between consecutive keys on a piano, between a white key and the next black key. In some cases, two white keys. But in general, it's the closest, the shortest distance between two notes. And he cut that distance in half on his trumpet, and that was really cool. UJ is asking, have I seen the new Panasonic LCDs yet? I myself have not, other than at CES, but my colleague Mark Henninger has had some up-close and personal experience with the AX800 series, and he was super impressed. Go on avsforum.com and look up Panasonic AX800, you'll find his report from a personal and private demo of the AX800 from Panasonic. And he loved it. He thought it was really good. It, in fact, challenged plasma picture quality. Now, that started a storm of controversy for sure on the site. And the comments in that particular post are many and quite heated, shall we say. but yeah, he was very, very impressed. And in fact, I'm going to write up a piece about how the AX800 won a British flat panel face off. Now, it was the European version or the British version, so I think it was the AX802, but same difference except for 50 hertz instead of 60 hertz operation. But it won this face-off. Now, I don't know the details of that yet. I haven't looked it up, but it's something I need to write up today. So I will soon know the answer to why it was that they chose that particular set. But that goes to show you, it's a heck of a set and well worth dealing, looking for, checking out. Let's see. Metallica Man. Oh, yeah, man. are there any CinemaScope theaters still in existence? Well, yeah, there's one in Hollywood. The Cinerama Dome is still there. But it's not using film anymore. I'd have to look into that to see exactly what technology it's using for that super widescreen effect. Nickname is asking, what's the best computer monitor HDTV hybrid? I'm afraid I don't know the answer to that question. I would probably say any LCD TV should be fine. I know Mark Henninger, my colleague at AVS, uses a Vizio 55-inch M series, I think, as his computer monitor and his TV. So you know, that should probably work. Logan 5, what happened to the four-color TV screens with the separate yellow stripes, actually sub-pixels? It wasn't Sony. It is still Sharp. Sharp still makes what they call the Quatron, which has red, green, blue, and yellow sub-pixels. They claim it's brighter and more colors and blah, blah, blah. I don't buy it. If you put the TV in, make it conform to the system standard that we have, which is called Rec. 709 for the range of colors that you can reproduce. Having the extra yellow pixel is superfluous. It makes no difference at all. It shouldn't make any difference at all. So it's a misguided thing, I think, probably marketing to say, look, we have more sub-pixels than everybody else. Yeah, okay, but it really doesn't do anything for you. Not in my opinion. Here we go.
Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet, home theater, digital photography, music players, whatever's on your mind. If it's technology, if it's got a chip in it, I'd love to talk to you about it. 888-ASK-LEO is the number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can use Skype out if you want to call us from somewhere else. That's fine. You can also, using that number, 888-88-ASK-LEO, you can also go to techguylabs.com. That's our website. We put all the show notes there, information, websites, all of that. I put them up there. And after the fact, we put audio and video from the shows, question-by-question answers, and your comments, too. techguylabs.com. Johnny Jett coming up this hour. He's going to be in studio with us. We'll spend a little time, a little extra time with our travel guru. I see him outside, I think, coming in the door. But let's continue on with the calls. Dan is in, we just talked to Dan. Frank is in Albany, New York. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Frank.
Yes, Leo. I kind of lied to Heather. I have kind of two questions. I just updated to Windows 7.
Not nice to lie to Heather, but that's okay. Misrepresented. You have Windows 7, okay.
I'm having a problem with the display. It's a laptop. The display keeps resetting itself, but it keeps finding the driver again.
When you say resetting itself, what are you seeing happening?
It goes black.
Goes black.
And then it comes back, and it has a message on it that says the Vista driver is not working anymore.
And you say the computer is 3 days old?
It's been 3 or 4 days since I updated to Windows 7.
Oh, I see. It's an older computer.
Old enough, yeah.
When you updated by upgrading Vista?
No, I totally formatted it like you suggest.
Good. Well, one thing you could do is go to the manufacturer of the laptop, make sure you have Windows 7 drivers.
Well, I didn't even get it from the Windows. I didn't even get it from my the company Acer.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Go to Acer and make sure you have the latest drivers for that hardware, because you have a Vista driver. That could be part of the problem. Vista and 7 have a similar driver model. That's not the issue, but it does sound like the driver's crashing. Drivers are the software that sits in between the operating system and hardware. If you think about it, especially with Windows, Windows has to run on a vast array of different hardware. And you couldn't possibly write Windows to, or you wouldn't want to write it to work with every possible video card, sound card, network card, monitor. That'd be crazy, crazy talk. So what you do is you create a standard for interoperating with hardware. You say, as Microsoft, look, if you guys want to make hardware that works with our operating system, you need to create a driver. And the driver needs to do these various things. It needs to respond to various kinds of calls, draw a window, draw a line, that kind of thing. And your driver will interpret. So the driver understands Windows and the driver understands the hardware, because it comes from the hardware manufacturer. Microsoft goes a little further and say, we also have a hardware quality lab. If you would like to spend some money, and it is pricey, you can get your driver certified by us to be compatible with Windows. A lot of companies don't do that because it is so expensive. But if you can get drivers for a video card, you'll sometimes see a choice between the uncertified drivers, which are usually more recent, and the WHQL certified drivers. That's Windows Hardware Quality Lab. And those have been certified by Microsoft to be fully compatible. So, what, and you get it from the manufacturer. If it's a laptop especially, sometimes with desktops, you've added a third-party card. So you go to the company that made the card. But if you got an Acer laptop, well, Acer made, you know, everything in there. And they'll have either standalone drivers for that video card, but more likely, especially on a laptop, you'll have motherboard drivers that include the video card drivers. So it's pretty important when you do this, Franklin, when you upgrade your operating system, that you then go and get the latest drivers for that laptop. And you hope, if the laptop's not too old, that they've updated it to work with Windows 7. Because that's the best. But if not, you Vista drivers may work. But just make sure you get the latest drivers. And it's not just the video card. Get everything. Update everything. What Windows does is it will go during the Windows update process, which you went through after you installed Windows. In fact, often when you first install Windows, the screen looks pretty bad. It's low resolution. And then it goes out and downloads updates. And Microsoft, as another service to the hardware manufacturers, will often keep all the drivers for all the different video cards kind of on its Windows update backend. So you may also get a driver that way. Probably did. It sounds like it's not working completely. That driver may be the WHQL driver. They may be a more recent driver that's been released. So it's always a good idea, especially if you're having problems, to go to the manufacturer's site and see if there is a more up-to-date driver. Sometimes it's enough just to uninstall the driver and rerun Windows Update. But since you installed this from scratch, that's why I was asking. It sounds like the Windows Vista driver was the driver Windows Update went out to get. And it sounds like it's having problems. So go to Acer. Go and actually look up that model laptop and get the very most latest drivers they offer. And that includes motherboard drivers. In fact, they may be all that they offer. I think it's almost always best to do that. The point, I guess, is that you have a choice. If one driver doesn't work, then try the WHQL driver. See if that works. If that doesn't work, then sometimes, in many cases, if it's an NVIDIA card, for instance, NVIDIA itself makes drivers for the video card. So you might go to the motherboard manufacturer or the card manufacturer, the company that... See, a number of people make NVIDIA video cards. Go to NVIDIA, which made the actual chip, and see if you get a version there. So that sometimes as many as three different up-to-date drivers, and maybe one works better than the other. So keep trying until you get one that works. It does sound like that's what's wrong, that the video driver is crashing. And the only fix is to get a new one. And the best place to get it, from the manufacturer. Ray in Greensboro, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ray.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I had called you probably about a year ago about having an iPhone, and I complained that they didn't have a blocking feature at that time, but I guess they incorporated that in OS 7.
Oh, good.
But now I'm at that point where I've kept my iPhone 4S hoping to it would last until the iPhone 6 comes out, because I really wasn't thrilled with the 5S, really. The screen size really didn't do much. I said, why change out all cables and all that other stuff? And, you know, but now my iPhone 4S is starting to show signs that it might not make it to the fall.
You want to hold out? There's a lot of people in your boat. Hold out as long as you can to get the latest iPhone. And since we know there's almost always going to be one in the fall, it probably will be a big difference, certainly be a big jump from your 4S. You're now already two generations behind, then you'll be three.
Right. Well, I mean, I was actually listening to you on, Monday or Tuesday when they had...
Monday,
Monday, I was actually listening to your live commenting during the Apple keynote. Well, yeah. Not the keynotes, but...
Yeah, that was a keynote. We cover those when we... Kind of the way we do it is we watch and talk over them and say, right, this isn't good, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was very... and I also listen to Windows Weekly with you every Wednesday.
Oh, good. Well, thank you.
Actually, I wrote to Cook, like you suggested, like, you know, you always get an answer from the CEO's office somehow.
Hold on a second because we have to take a break. I want to find out what happened. Don't go away. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Ba-ba-da-ba-ba-ba-dum. Our show today brought to you by my buddies at RingCentral. Our phone system here, not the radio phone system, but the office phone system, is from RingCentral. And, you know, if you run an office or you own a business, you probably know there are a lot of different choices for how to do phones for a business. We didn't even do a phone when we were in the little place. But as soon as we moved to the big studio, I was informed in no uncertain terms that we better darn well provide a phone system for our employees. And I thought, oh, I don't want to go to AT&T and get a PBX in the basement. I had bad memories of that from the old days. Fortunately, in these modern times, it's much easier. You can use a cloud-based phone system. We chose RingCentral, and now 2.5, almost 3 years later, we're so happy we did. First of all, as the boss, you'll like it because it's affordable. Starts at $25 a month per user. Very easy to add another user, by the way. You just give them a phone, they plug it in, and you're good to go. And because it's cloud-based, they add features all the time. There's no startup cost. There's no PBX hardware to install. You get all the things that, you know, you would expect with a good phone system. You get the auto receptionist, greets their callers, announces employees and department extensions. But you also get stuff that's very cool, very modern. You know, faxes and voicemails go to your email. There's apps for all the smartphones, which means you can call from your business number from your home using your smartphone. Receive calls at the 800 number on your smartphone. Receive faxes, even business texts. And now they've added meetings, which is really cool. You can host face-to-face meetings in high definition, video too, yes, document and video sharing as part of your RingCentral subscription. This makes RingCentral absolutely the single best business solution on the market today. It does everything, everything. Did I mention $25 per month per user? And you can start right now with a free 30-day trial. Visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT, or when you want to call, you can call a special number just for TWIT listeners, for our podcast listeners, 800-543-9980, 800-543-9980. And by the way, not only do you get a 30-day risk-free trial, but when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free up to a total of 20 phones. 20 phones! Wow. 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com. Promo code TWIT. I made a lot of decisions as a small business person, but this is one I do not regret. Ringcentral.com. Nathan Staton, our musical director, he's pandering to me. All the 80s music I can eat. 8888, Ask Leo's the number. We were talking to Ray in Greensboro. Sorry I had to cut you off. You said you got an iPhone, and I can't remember what it was you were, it wasn't working, but you wrote to Tim Cook, the CEO. Did you get a response?
No, I wrote to him twice, and this was probably about 3-4 months ago, just to, you know, make some suggestions about. I said, I really like your product, but why not have a feature for when you're driving, have the phone automatically send a message saying, I'm driving right now.
Yeah, there's a nice feature in Android that does that.
I know, and even Windows phones has that feature.
I think Apple's adding that, and did they not add it in iOS 7? Because I thought they were going to do that.
No. They do have the blocking feature, which
it blocks, but it doesn't say, I'm driving, so don't bug me.
Right, I have a thing where I actually put like a keystroke where I could hit D 3 times and it sends that message.
Parents of teenagers want it to happen automatically. In fact, I've seen...
Right, and that's what I was saying. Like,
I think that's something announced in iOS 8 is when the car's moving, you can have it either auto respond saying, hey, I'm driving. You can block texts and incoming calls. I think that's a really good idea. I think more and more you're going to see phones do that.
The thing is, I did write to him twice and didn't get an answer, but I guess what? I wrote to Bill Gates directly, and not that I got an answer from him, but I did get an answer 3 days later from his office. Huh. I made a suggestion.
Yeah, you wouldn't. You'd probably be the same thing with Tim Cook. I doubt either of them answers email directly.
No, but I didn't even get an answer from his office.
You know, there may be a reason for that. You know, one thing that is always an issue, if somebody suggests like an idea or an invention, same thing happens when we were when I was working for television networks. If people suggest show ideas, you're not supposed to read them. Because what you don't want is evidence that you've read this and then you create something accidentally that's the same and get sued. And so it may well be that if you contact a big company like Apple with an invention, an idea, hey, you should do this, they may, for legal reasons, not even open it. I don't know. I'm just saying. I know it was a big issue in the television, and we would have one person that was sole job was to read pitches. And that person would be like clean roomed and separated from the rest of the company so they wouldn't pollute us with ideas.
Well, probably, you know, the funny thing is I mean, they didn't address when I wrote to Microsoft.
Do you have a question? Because I really got to move here.
Oh, yeah. Well, what I was going to say is I made a suggestion to Microsoft, which they didn't really. And I also wrote to Joanne Foley about it, too. But I had suggested, you know, like about maybe getting more apps by hiring a whole bunch of people that would just create apps for the Windows Phone, because that's the one thing I think that's suffering. But
I agree. You know, hey, thanks for the call, Bill in Los Angeles. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
Hey, Bill.
Yeah, I started receiving a magazine on a monthly basis called Wired.
Yeah, wonderful magazine.
And the June issue had a article that I'm not really a technophile, but it was so interesting. They're talking about the new virtual reality thing called the Oculus Rift.
Yeah, Facebook just bought them. Yeah, there was kind of a big story a few months ago when Facebook bought them for what was it, $3 billion?
Yeah, well, that's one of the things they say that is helping them get a little bit more, research ability, because they now have the backing of Facebook.
Well, we'll see. You know, a lot of people. So I can tell you a little bit about Oculus Rift. I have one sitting right down here. It was a Kickstarter project, and they kind of raised the ire of some of the people who had donated to the Kickstarter project when they sold for great gobs of money to Facebook. The idea was they had come up with a much better way of making virtual reality glasses. Now, I'm not a big fan of this idea, but eventually I think, you know, the goal of gaming certainly and computing maybe in general is to make it more immersive, more real. And we've all read some, maybe not all of us, many of us have read science fiction stories to that end where you plug in something into your neck and you're in a virtual reality world. It's what The Matrix was all about. The book Neuromancer, Neal Stephenson's Snow Crash, all talked about a metaverse, a virtual reality world that was so real you'd think you were in it. Well, this is the first steps along those lines. You put on this helmet, and I've used it many times. It kind of makes me queasy, frankly. But when you turn your head, the picture moves with your head. Maybe you saw Jimmy Fallon, you saw the Tonight Show, was it last night or the night before? I think it was Friday night, that Joshua Topolsky from The Verge came on with a similar device from Sony. Sony wants everybody to know, hey, we're doing it too. The idea is you put this on and you're in an immersive world. And when you move around, you know, the screen moves around. So a lot of people gave a lot of money to Oculus, millions of dollars. They raised a lot of money. They built a prototype, a developer prototype. That's how I got mine. And then along comes Facebook, and they sell it for $3 billion, I should say. And the folks at Facebook probably have their own agenda. I think a lot of people who said, no, we gave you money because we wanted you to develop this, not because we wanted you to sell out to Mark Zuckerberg, were pretty upset, including the guy who created Doom, John Romero, created Quake. He had actually joined Oculus. And actually, the guy who created Minecraft, Notch, just a week before he'd gone to visit the Oculus headquarters, was so impressed, he said, I'm going to make a Minecraft for the Oculus Rift. And Notch, at least, after this sale, said, man, I'm not doing it now. I don't want to do it for Facebook. So the jury's still out whether this will be a good thing for Oculus or not. It's certainly a good thing for the founders. They made a lot of money. It does seem like the resources of Facebook could... I'm not sure what Facebook would do with this. Do you want a virtual reality Facebook? Maybe that's what they're going to do. I don't know. Carmack, not Romero. Thank you. I got the name wrong. And I think Carmack is still there. As far as I know, he's still there. So maybe he wasn't upset with it. Any event. Yeah, I think, Bill, it's a very interesting technology. I've used it. It's made me sick several times. You know why it does? Because your eyes say you're moving, just like in a car, your eye or a boat. Your eyes say you're moving, and your inner ear says, no, you're not. And the confusion causes nausea. So I think it'll be very interesting to see what Facebook does with this. I hope it doesn't, you know, come up with some weird commercial use for it that benefits Facebook, but not us. It's not the only people doing this. As I mentioned, Sony's got a lot of other companies are doing it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks for the call, Bill. 8888 Ask Leo. Hey, guess who's here? Johnny Jett, our travel guru. Johnny's going to join us in just a few minutes. We're going to spend a little time. He's in studio talking about travel, how to use technology to save you money, where he's been, where he's going. If you love travel, we'll even take some calls. Stay tuned. 8888 Ask Leo. Our website is techguylabs.com. When you go there, you'll be able to visit our chat room, too. A lot of nice people in there. You can participate in the chat. techguylabs.com. More of your calls and Johnny Jett coming up right after this. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Look who the cat drug in. Look who the jet drug in. Mr. Johnny Jett, our travel guru. I never get to see you in person, Johnny. We're usually on Skype, and you're usually in some exotic locale. Is the Tech Guy Labs, does that qualify as an exotic locale?
Petaluma is pretty darn.
Is this your first time here?
Second time in the Brick House, but the first time doing a show.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize the studio's so big. On TV, it looks like, you know, the backdrop is right next to you, but it's a good...
You should see it on radio. It's even smaller. So Johnny is johnnyjett.com, at Johnny Jett, and covers travel, has the best life in the world. He travels, well, you know, I don't know, maybe not. I shouldn't put words in your mouth. Do you like to travel all the time?
Are you kidding me? I used to be afraid to fly, got over my fear. Used to be afraid to leave the house at one point when I was in high school, right after high school. And now it's hard to keep me home for
I've noticed that, and so has your lovely wife, Natalie.
Yes, so she's here.
But she gets to go with you a lot.
She does a lot.
That's nice.
So I go to usually around 20 countries a year, and she usually goes to about 10.
Fair enough.
It's not too bad.
10's a lot.
10? I think everyone should go to at least one new country a year.
Is that the goal?
Yeah, so if you're 50 years old, you should go to at least 50 countries.
Oh, per year of life?
Yes.
So I should have been in 50 countries.
Exactly.
How many are there? There's only like 215.
There's 193.
193.
According to the UN.
So if I live to 193, I'm going to have to start over.
You got to start going. You need to start. You got to get cracking.
I'm in a loop.
I've been very lucky because now, you know, I think this year I've been to around 8 countries.
Wow,
but
that's neat.
It's lucky.
Now, you asked me, because I think you do this questionnaire on your website, johnnyjett.com, like the travel questionnaire. You asked me how many of the UNESCO World Heritage sites I had seen. Is that a bucket list thing, trying to get to as many of those as possible?
There are for some people. Actually, I have a friend of mine who's a travel blogger who's... His name is Gary Arndt, and he's been to, I think, 200 and...
There's only 198 countries.
No, but...
Each oh, 200 of the,
yeah,
the World UNESCO World Heritage. There's how many are there total? Those 400 something?
No,
there's a lot.
I don't know, but there's a lot.
There's
a
lot.
I think China might have the most.
I think China is.
I think they have.
That's the funny thing. Sometimes it's like a river. Sometimes like it's a whole country.
Or the whole city.
Or the whole city.
Right.
So sometimes you can get two UNESCO World Heritage sites in a single day.
And I don't even know how many I've been to. I've been to a bunch. But I think my questionnaire said, what was your favorite one?
Oh, Machu Picchu so far.
Okay. I
loved Machu Picchu.
I've actually never been to Machu Picchu.
Aha, beat you.
I'm embarrassed.
Well, it's hard work getting there.
You're right.
Because you have to first of all, you have to go to Central or South America.
Yeah. You got to go to Lima.
It's in Lima, Peru. You can fly to Lima. And then you get to Cusco somehow. Right. I think we flew.
You fly.
And then there's a train that goes into the mountains, or you go up to the Urubamba River, and you go to the small town. And then there's an additional hike or drive, and it feels like you're going far, far away. It's beautiful, though.
And how is your breathing?
Well, it's pretty high. You know, and you warned me, I think, when you arrive in Cusco, that we stayed at a beautiful old monastery. And they give you coca leaf tea the minute you walk in the door, and they say this is good for you. And you may be you may have a headache, but you don't care after that. Right. You feel you feel pretty good.
So what apps do you use when you go to places like that?
You know, it's funny. I don't think I used any apps. No. First of all, internet is very expensive.
Right.
This is a big something we talk about on the show a lot. Is you kind of have to pay through the nose if you're an American going somewhere else to get internet access. So I don't think I used any apps. Oh, I know I did. I did one Foursquare check-in. In fact, I was the mayor of Machu Picchu for about a month because apparently not a lot of people go there.
Right.
I checked in two or three times and I got to be the mayor.
So when you travel, what are your favorite apps? I thought that's one thing we could talk about today is like some of the our favorite travel apps.
Well, and that's one of the reasons I think people are so interested in getting access as they travel. They're so useful. For instance, Google Maps is phenomenal. Having that kind of security that as you get in a bus or you take a walk around a town, that you can always say, well, where's my hotel? And it will guide you back is huge, don't you think?
For sure.
Yeah, I love that.
Without a doubt. But my cousin, actually, I just met with my cousin this morning for breakfast here in San Francisco, who I really get to see. And he told me about an app that I never heard of. It's called Next Bus.
Next Bus.
Because I said, how'd you get here? He goes, you know, I just jumped on the bus.
I took the Next Bus.
And I go, what app did you use? And he said, next app.
So Next Bus. Does it have every transit?
It tells you exactly which ones, right? It knows where you are, so it'll tell you which ones are going to and from
the
where
Next Bus is in 7 minutes.
From here.
From here to where? I don't know, but does it matter?
It should have all the different bus routes. Like, I brought it up in the city because I just came in from San Francisco.
In the city, San Francisco is very good. You live in L.A., which is not great for mass transit.
I've never been on the bus in L.A.
Ever? You're not alone. Most people have never been on the bus.
But in New York City, that's all I do. When I land at JFK, actually, when I land at LaGuardia, I take the bus at LaGuardia.
LaGuardia, yeah.
I take the M60 bus, and then I go to the 125th Street station, and then I jump on a subway for a free transfer, and it costs $7.50. No, sorry, it costs $2.50 for everything.
So you kind of need something like Next Bus when you're doing that because that sounds pretty complicated. You have to know what to take and where.
Unfortunately, New York is the best city in the world. Well, not unfortunately. Fortunately, it is the best city. But unfortunately, they have
it's crazy.
You know, ridiculous.
You must
mass
take
transit.
The A train.
Especially coming from JFK, because then when I land, I take the air train.
And you transfer in Queens.
You got to go to Jamaica Station, and then you jump either on the E train or Long Island Railroad. But anyway, they should just one train. Like,
what's your favorite airport?
In the world?
Yeah.
Hong Kong or Singapore.
Hong Kong or Singapore. Because you're in Hong Kong or Singapore, that makes it good.
Yeah.
Then what's your least favorite? What airport is the worst? Not Heathrow, right? Everybody says Heathrow.
I love Heathrow's T5. I don't like landing in Heathrow because I don't think there's one time I've ever been when I did not circle. Even on clear days, you're always circling.
Yeah.
But inside...
I try to avoid Chicago O'Hare for the same reason. It seems like there's a lot of weather. In the summer, it's thunderstorms. In the winter, it's snow.
I try to avoid all the New York airports in the afternoon. In the evening.
Yeah. And is there an app for that?
There's plenty of apps, actually. One of my favorite apps.
He's the king. Look, what do you have? A Windows phone and an Android device?
This is
iPhone?
This is a new Lumia Icon.
Yeah, that's nice. That's on Verizon, isn't it? Do you like that?
I just got it yesterday. They just sent it to me to test out the video because it supposedly has the best video of them all.
Yeah, Nokia does a good job.
I've been using the Android, and unfortunately, what I don't like about the Sony Xperia, when I try and bring up my boarding pass, I just came in from LA yesterday.
That's okay. Do you do that? Do you do the electronic boarding pass?
Well, I print it out first, and my printer.
By the way, print it out, folks, because half the time you get there. I was stuck at the gate for not the gate, but to get through the security for ages because it was
a lot of times the readers don't read it.
Didn't read it. Didn't work. I had to try over and over. Finally, said step aside. And I'm standing here without a boarding pass or anything.
Well, I do both. So the one thing you got to do is when you print your boarding pass at home, don't put it in your back pocket. Because when you sit down, it crinkles it up and it wouldn't read it. And then I try to bring it up on my phone. And I didn't use the American Airlines app. I was just using my email to bring up the...
That should work.
And this will not, search it. But then I go to the American Airlines app and it works well. So actually, that's one of my big tips. Whatever airline you're flying,
Use their app.
Download their app. But also print out your boarding pass because sometimes the breeders do not read it at the TSA security.
The breeders? Readers.
The readers. the readers.
The readers won't read it either.
Am I mumbling?
No, I'm sorry.
I do mumble.
No, you don't mumble. You're perfect. You sound like you're sitting right next to me. It's amazing.
I am right next to you.
Best Skype connection we've had. What? You're here? Best Skype connection ever. I love it.
So,
do you? Well, how do you book your travel?
I book it. I usually book it myself. So
you don't use a travel agent?
Very rarely. But I love travel agents. I'll use them for big trips, like we talked about, for cruises, or if it's your honeymoon, or if it's a, you know, if you're going.
Why away for your honeymoon?
Because it's something. It's a once in a lifetime.
You want it to be good,
and you want to make sure there's nothing wrong. But
you're the travel expert. You think even you think a travel agent knows more than you do?
Of course,
that's their job.
Yeah.
Johnny Jess with us. Let's stick around, will you? I mean, you're here. We might as well do another segment.
I would love to.
Love talking to you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls still to come. Oh, there's no rambling man more rambler than Mr. Johnny Jett, johnnyjett.com. He travels everywhere. Nowadays, when you book and travel, you can do it all yourself. You go to Kayak or you go to the airline site, the hotels, PricelineHotel.com. You can put it together all by yourself. Don't you save money doing that over a travel agent?
For sure. But the thing about a travel agent is that usually you want to go to one that specializes in either a region or cruises, because these guys have connections. They can either get you upgrades, or they know the area so well, they'll tell you what itinerary you should do.
That's nice. I mean, you can read TripAdvisor all you want, but it's nice to actually talk to somebody who's been there and you can trust and who right. can say, oh, don't do that.
Well, in the old days, travel agents were just writing tickets and making commission. But once the airline stopped that,
yeah.
the ones who are stuck around are the ones that are really good, and they can help you.
If they're still in business.
And what's nice about travel agents, if something goes wrong, if there's a volcano in Iceland or a big snowstorm, you don't have to sit on the phone for 4 hours trying to change your tickets. You call the travel agent and they do it for you.
That's what they do.
So it's worth the $25 or $40 fee or whatever they charge.
So you do pay them
once in a while. But also, if something does happen,
right.
I can use them. I have a friend called Brett Snyder. He runs Cranky Concierge.
Yes, you've mentioned
him. We've mentioned this before. And so let's say you do book it all on your own, but you don't want to sit on the phone for something going wrong for 4 hours. You can hire him. I think he charges $130, which could be worth it for a lot of people.
I want to mention this Nixie Pixel story because I think this is a cautionary tale for everybody. Nixie is a well-known YouTuber. She's great. Does really fun videos on YouTube. She's super smart. She's been in Asia for 6 months. She wants to come home. I guess she got sick, and so she missed her. I'm gathering from her post on Google+, she missed her home return flight, and she says she's on ANA. Now they say you have to pay more or wait months for another ticket, and so she's trying to get people to tweet this and tell the world and maybe get United to help out. She says, please share this so I can come home on Twitter. Ticket is paid for, but ANA support can't help with the United flight I need, so I'm stuck in Asia. So, what's going on? How could this happen to me?
Of course. So she bought, I'm guessing, a non-refundable ticket. So that's why they sell refundable tickets, and they do cost more, but she did that, and I guess she didn't buy travel insurance. So she bought travel insurance, and she got sick, and that was in the coverage she would have been taken care of. So there's a couple things she can still do now. And by the way, if you
call the cranky concierge, Nixie.
Well, you could. He would help you on that, but it's going to cost you some money, and it's going to cost additional money for him to buy you a ticket or whatever he's going to do.
Right.
But one thing that she could do is she has airline miles. This is a great time to use your airline miles. So I always keep like 100,000 miles in the
just
bank.
Just as like emergency
so
ticket.
So there's a death in the family or you need to go somewhere last minute.
That's good thinking.
Because it costs a lot of money for a last minute ticket. That's what she's experiencing right now. So she needs to... You know, either use some miles, but if you get these emails, by the way, you need to make sure they're not scams because people do ask for money. You don't ever want to send money to these people, even if they're your friends.
I've had this happen to me. In fact, often is your friend. If you this was a problem with Yahoo Mail for a while. It happened to my gardener, who had just done the yard yesterday, so I knew it was fake, sent an email saying, help, I'm stranded in Europe. They mugged me. They stole my passport. If you could wire me $1,000, I'll pay you back as soon as I get home to Petaluma to... work on your garden. It was obvious they'd read his email. They'd scammed him into his email account. They'd read his email, got enough information to make it look credible, and it would have fooled me if I hadn't just seen him. So I called him. I said, Owen, are you are you in Europe stranded? He said, no, I'm right here. I said, well, you better change your Yahoo password.
Well, yeah. Well, I've gotten those messages before from friends, and I was like, oh, my God. I would just contact them to make sure that it's legitimate.
In this case, she's made a video.
She's legitimate, so she either needs to use miles or she should go to the airport and see if one of the agents at the ticket counter will swap it out for free.
Right.
But, you know, it's getting more difficult these days with technology because they're following everything. They all your bosses know what's going on. You can't give free upgrades like you used to be able to or even change
tickets.
Oh,
you mean the bosses of the ticket agents, they can't get away with stuff
anymore. It's tough now. It's much tougher. Gate agents have a lot more leniency, but it's still getting more difficult for them. So that's why it's getting tough to upgrade. Like in the old days, you could upgrade just for dressing well or being nice. And now to get upgraded, you really need – you really need to work for it.
Well, here's the good news. In just the time since we've talked about it, apparently United did step in, and she's got a ticket home.
Oh, good.
So,
and this is another way to do it, by the way. Social media. They don't want to have bad publicity, and that's why when United or any of these other airlines had these mistake fares, which usually happens for 15 or 30 minutes, but they're sometimes offering tickets to Europe for $20. You know, they're going to honor them because the PR is just going to kill them.
Well, I think we got her home.
Good. Good job.
Good job, Johnny.
But everyone else, you know, you should think about getting travel insurance.
Well, this is the lesson.
Or buy a refundable ticket.
But refundable tickets usually are a lot more than non-refundable.
They are.
So I almost never get refundable
Although
tickets.
On American Airlines, they do have this choice thing. And when you book a ticket on AA.com, just always check and see how much more it is. And if there's any chance that you might change your ticket, because they'll do it without a change fee. And it used to actually just 2 months ago was really cheap. They just raised the prices a bit.
So, boy, we got some good tools now. We got social media. We got the cranky concierge.
Yep.
We got save points for insurance. We have refundable tickets. And now, is this flight insurance expensive?
It all depends on what you spend, where you're going. We talked about it last week or the week before. You know, I bought it from my dad when we went to Europe a few weeks ago.
Because he's older.
He's 85.
Yeah, and so you want medical evacuation.
I wanted everything. So, yeah. And that only cost me $100 and something. And that's because – actually, it was $106, and that's because I used airline miles for his ticket.
Right.
Otherwise, it would have been a lot more money.
The real problem is young people, they travel. They travel on a shoestring, on a budget.
Without a doubt.
And so this happens.
But try and keep some miles or get a big following on social media. Like,
yeah, apparently that worked, Nixie. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back more with Johnny Jett, our travel guru. He's at johnnyjett.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Johnny Jett. And you've been taking lots of pictures on Instagram. I love your Instagram account.
Thank you.
Johnny Jett. Are you in the running for something like travel writer, blogger of the year, or something like that?
USA Today.
What is it? Tell me again.
USA Today. They have a...
Where can I find that? Maybe if I Google USA Today travel blogger.
It's a Twitter, travel Twitter content. I don't even know what it is.
I just want people to vote for you. We're going to use We saved Nixie Pixel. Now let's save Johnny Jett. USA Today.
When I first got it, I put it on my Facebook, and I was in front, and now I'm not even in the top five. So
best Twitter travelers.
Yeah,
that's it. Vote for your favorite Twitter traveler.
But you can just sit there and click and refresh, which I'm not going to do. But I think that's what some people might do.
All right, I'm going to put a link in our show notes at techguylabs.com, and you can vote for your favorite Twitter.
So if you hit vote.
Traveler. Let me just put this in the chat room. We're going to get the entire chat room doing it. 1,000 votes right there. Absolutely free, Johnny. No charge to you.
Thank you.
What is your prize?
I don't think you win anything. I think you win a good handshake for getting them a lot of traffic.
I think that's really what it's all about, isn't it? Best Twitter traffic. It's hard even to say that.
Have you used social media
all along, or is this when you started the blog and the...
Well, right when it came out, for sure. I mean, I started the newsletter in 1995 when I first got email. Then I started my website in 1999. And then I started social media 2006, I guess it was.
Yeah. Yeah. Twitter came along in 2006. And I think social media has really been a boon for travelers. I know when I went to Buenos Aires, I just tweeted, hey, I'm going to be in Buenos Aires. Where should I go? And a number of people tweeted me back. And then I said, well, as long as I'm here, come on and meet me. And about 10 people, we had a nice dinner. They said, you got to have some probleta. And I did. I mean, it's amazing.
I agree.
It's amazing.
I host a weekly travel Twitter chat.
At Johnny Jett, if you want to know more. Johnny Jett, J JohnnyJet.com, thank you for being here.
Thanks
it's great
for having
to
me.
See you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. You didn't have email in 1995.
I thought that was a commercial break.
What?
I thought our whole conversation was during a commercial.
No. I read the ad and then we come back.
I see.
It's confusing.
I see.
Because real, man. That was live on the radio. Man. We got you millions of votes on the radio. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, hour three of the Tech Guy radio program. 8888. Ask Leo the phone number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, you want to talk high tech. That's what we're here for. You can also visit our website, techguylabs.com. That'll give you a link to our chat room. Always fun. Lots of people in there and family friendly. We make sure of that. Techguylabs.com also has links to everything we mentioned on the show, links to Johnny's pages, all of that stuff. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the number you're calling. Heather Hammond, the phone ranger, who has carefully selected Doug in Upton, California, as our next caller. Hi, Doug.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm well, how are you?
I am good. You remember saying to me one time that I was the Forrest Gump of computers?
That's rude, no. Did I really say that? I apologize.
No, it was totally, that was back in the XP days.
Oh, well, that was a long time ago, yeah.
Oh, a long time ago.
Long time. Why did I call you, just out of curiosity, what prompted my insult? What did you do to become the Forrest Gump of computers?
No, it wasn't an insult. You were just being funny, but...
Thank you for taking it that way.
when they first came out, and I was going, how can I make it go faster?
Oh, yeah.
That's
when I was a shock jock. I've reformed my ways now.
Well, anyways, so I just wanted to, that would be funny if you remembered that. I'm a long way now.
You know, you remind me of the Forrest Gump of computers. What can I do for you, Doug?
I have an Outlook problem, my Microsoft Outlook, on one of my computers. I have two of them networked in one room because I don't want to get up and walk 2 feet, so I got it all. It's all crazy. I'm sick with the computers. Anyways,
you've got a disease.
I call it up, and it says, cannot start Microsoft Outlook, cannot open the Outlook window. Set of folders cannot be opened. The information store cannot be opened. That's what it says when it pops up.
Yeah. Well, you know what they say. Outlook is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. So one works, but one doesn't.
Right. Everything else in Office works. But I did some. See, my other computer is my, I call it Mini-Me. And it's kind of like my cloud, but it's
on the
ground.
Does it complete you?
What?
Never mind. Mini-Me works fine.
No, supercomputer works fine. It's Mini-Me that doesn't work.
How's Ethel and Fred? Do you have a Fred and Ethel in there as well?
No.
So here's a problem that comes up with Outlook a lot. Outlook saves everything, your calendar, your address book, and all your email.
Right.
Everything in one big PST file.
Yeah.
I've never liked that as a strategy. It's you can't look into it. It's not... it's opaque. If it gets corrupted, or it's basically a database, if you think about it.
Yeah.
If it gets corrupted or damaged, you're going to, I think, get this kind of issue. You're going to get this kind of response. Now, one thing you could try is finding that outlook.pst file.
Where do I go to look for it in the first place?
Outlook will tell you where it is if you right click on it and you right click on your emails and it'll tell you.
File location.
Yeah. Otherwise, it generally is in the I can't remember the long thing, but it's in a Microsoft. It's in your programs folder and then in there, and it's in the Microsoft folder, and in there it's in the Office folder. You can dig down and find
Office 14. You mean maybe?
Yeah, you can dig down and find it. Or you could just do a search for outlook.pst.
Right.
Actually, what version of Windows are you using?
I have 7 professional.
Okay. It's in the user, whatever your name is, folder, my app data. There's an app data folder.
App data, okay.
Yeah. And then what I would try is taking it, that big file, and it may be really big. If it's more than 2 gigabytes, that's another issue. Yeah, it can be really big.
No
take
idea
it,
it would be that
and
big.
And drag it to the desktop, put it somewhere safe, back it up, put it somewhere safe, but take it out of that folder and then relaunch Outlook, and Outlook will say, it'll recreate it, it'll create a new one.
Oh, good show.
And then
good
see show. If it runs.
Yeah, I have that Office Configuration Analyzer tool. That does, all it does is tell you, hey, you're really screwed up. And
a lot of good that is, huh?
There you go. I hope you can sleep at night now.
A lot of good that is. So, yeah, so find that Outlook.pst file. Move it and see if it starts up fine. If it does, then you have a corrupt Outlook.pst file. You'll find on the internet a number of tools that you can use to rebuild it. If it's because it's simply a database file, often you can rebuild the index and everything will be fine.
I thought, you know, doing the repair with the installed disk would do it, but that didn't do it.
Well, that's because I don't think Outlook's broken. I think the data file's broken. And if
A
program's working, and that's why it didn't say there was any error, because there isn't with the program. It's just trying to open a file, and it's making it choke.
Yeah.
It's making it choke. So we've got a lot of the chat room's been great, and they've been putting a lot of information out there. For instance, the app data folder tends to be hidden. So you can do, you can go to a command line and CD. Percent sign app data, because that's a special variable.
Nothing's hidden on my system.
Nothing's hidden? well, there you go.
My own little world over here. Computers don't lie to me.
You're the magic mic of computers. Is that what what you're saying here?
I am. Yeah, I'm sick with it.
Hey, a pleasure talking to you, Doug. Yeah, I think it's just a corrupt data file. It happens an awful lot. The good news is, you know, your program's all right because you ran the diagnostics on it. You're going to need to show protected files and then find that Outlook.pst file, move it out, put it somewhere else. If you look online too, you'll see a number of ways you can rebuild the Outlook file. Sometimes just, I can't remember if it's holding down the Alt key when you start Outlook. I think there's a key you can hold down that says, rebuild that. In fact, here we go. Brian W's put in the chat room a Microsoft Knowledge Base article 227, how to repair your Outlook PST file. And I figure they probably wouldn't have a big article about this if it didn't happen once in a while. It says exit Outlook and start the inbox repair tool. So that'll do it. You can also manually repair it, and they talk about how to do that. You can also try some other tricks. There's quite a long list, actually. Too long for me to read. Good luck, Doug. Thanks for calling. Run, Forrest, run. John, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, John.
Hi, Leo. I'm an older fellow about your age. I'm also an ex-Canadian. I'm reasonably adept at computers. I've built my own, and I'm a beta tester for Adobe.
Okay.
But I'm a Luddite when it comes to phones, and I need some advice. I'm just using the phone as a phone, and mostly when
what?
I'm
what? How car. How odd!
Yes,
you make calls with that pocket computer.
Well, I try. That's the problem.
Okay,
I'm retired, and I do dog rescue, and I spend a lot of time in the car driving out to dog shelters picking up dogs, and I need to make phones. I have a Samsung Brightside phone. It's a feature phone, not a smartphone.
Right.
Mostly I use it in the car using a Bluetooth headset. My problem is that when I press the button on the Bluetooth to initiate a call, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. The problem seems to be that the voice dialing through the Bluetooth only works if the phone is on the home page. So I often have to reach for the phone and press the button on the lower left corner to get to the home page in order to be able to do the voice dialing with the Bluetooth, which is obviously a pain.
That's not a good thing, is it? Yeah.
No,
what kind of Bluetooth headset are you using?
I've had two. The one I had before, and I had the same problem with both, was a Jawbone Era, and now I have a Sennheiser Presence.
Yeah, so if it's happening with both, it sounds like it has nothing to do with the Bluetooth headset, but everything to do with the function of that phone.
That's what I think. Also, when I press the button on the Bluetooth to end a call, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, and I have to reach for the phone to end the call.
Yeah. Hang on a second. We have to take a break, but come up with a question, and we'll talk to you when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I was just looking at my old... I have so many old phones. Here's a Galaxy S4. So many old phones lying around. Just look at the original HTC One. See, I replaced it with the new HTC One. This is a good time for me maybe to go to, maybe you too, to Gazelle.com. You know about Gazelle? Gazelle's the crazy guys at Gazelle will buy your old stuff, give you cash on the barrel head for your old phones, your old tablets, your old iPods, even that old Mac Mini or Apple display, your old Apple TV. What do you got? You got a... I should actually... Let me see my how much this Galaxy S4 is worth. It's actually, you know, I bought it fairly recently. It's in good shape. It was unlocked. Got the European Galaxy S4. That's it, the i9500. It's in good condition. Wow, that's great. I've been sitting here. This thing's just been sitting on my desk. It's like I'm leaving $165. Just sit there. What is that? What is that? Is that crazy talk? That's crazy. Why would you do that? Go out there. Go to Gazelle and sell that thing. Get some money for it. Right, Heather?
Totally.
Totally.
I'm just thinking of all the champagne we could buy.
Champagne. They'll buy even broken iPads and iPhones. If you're excited about the new iPhone, you want to kind of price out. You see, the deal on this is it good for 30 days. So you can actually just, you don't, it's not a commitment. You can find out what it's worth right now. Get that quote. You don't have to pull the trigger for 30 days. You just get a new iPad or a Moto X. You're getting excited about the new Moto X, the new iPad. Gazelle wants to buy your used Apple or Android device, your old Samsungs, your old Surface tablets. You want to get the new Surface Pro 3? Well, by all means, sell the old Surface. Why keep it? Gazelle.com. If you forget to wipe the data, they'll wipe it for you. They pay postage on anything worth more than a buck. They'll even buy broken gadgets like iPhones and iPads. Get a risk-free offer for your gadgets plus free shipping right now at Gazelle.com. You know what? They've paid more than $100 million to over 700,000 customers. That's amazing. Gazelle, what's your Apple or Android device worth? Gazelle.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. John's having trouble with his Bluetooth headset and his ancient Samsung feature phone. What can I do for you, though? I hear your problem. I hear your tale of woe.
It's only a year old.
Yeah. Well, it's ancient in capacity, if not in in years.
The question is, and by the way, I've already had Verizon replace the phone with me with another one of the same model.
Yeah, I think it's the phone. I think it's just the way the phone is.
Right. Is that the way most phones are, or am I, or when I get a new phone?
It's not the way any smartphone I've used is, but I've never, it's been a long time since I've used a feature phone, so I don't know. Are you against, you tell me you only want to make phone calls, so it's kind of, you don't need a data phone. You don't need a smartphone.
No, and the problem is the plans cost $80
right,
a month.
Right, you have to pay for
$40 a month.
You have to pay for data and all that stuff that you wouldn't use. I'll be honest, I can't help you. I have no idea. That doesn't seem like normal behavior. I mean, as I think about it, I have used a Bluetooth headset with feature phones. I only went to smartphones in the mid-2000s, and I never had this issue. So I suspect it's just that junky Samsung phone. You might ask the folks at Verizon, hey, can I try another phone? I just want to see if the other ones do the same thing. Jay in Providence, North Carolina, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, I have 2 months left on a 3-year Apple protection plan, one of those extended warranties for my Mac, and I'm wondering if there's any kind of test that I can do to the hardware.
You want to break it now?
Yeah.
Not in 4 months.
Right.
Yeah, because I don't know how computers know. Technology somehow knows when the warranty runs out, and they just wait to the day after, and then they break. There isn't really. I mean, you can exercise the hard drive. You can make it work extra hard trying to make it fail. But, you know, a lot of hard drives, in fact, all modern hard drives are what we call smart. But unfortunately, smart ain't so smart. It's kind of a dumb technology. The idea was it would monitor. It stands for self-monitoring analysis and reporting technology. It would monitor the hard drive as it was being used and warn you, pop up warnings if it was about to fail. The problem is the hard drive manufacturers really didn't like this idea. And so by the time Smart actually shipped in hard drives, it didn't do anything. So there isn't really any way to figure out. You could run SpinRite on it, I guess, and try to break it. You're on Windows?
No, it's a Mac.
Oh, you said Mac. That's right. I don't know if there are any smart apps for the Mac. There are for PCs. I bet they are for the Mac. You might look around and see if there's anybody who has a smart app. There are only a few good tool sets for the Macintosh. I use Tech Tool Pro from Micromat, and that will have in it, I don't know if it's worth buying it because it's going to cost as much as a new hard drive, but that will have in it a way to kind of bang on the disk. Yeah, Mac drive testing software. That might be something, worth doing, but a new hard drive isn't that expensive, really. So did you say an iMac?
Mac Mini.
Not hard to replace that. That's a laptop drive in there, and it's not hard to replace it. So you need a putty knife. There's no screws in the Mac Mini, or very few. A lot of it's friction. In fact, one of the things you might hope it fails, because then you could put a solid state drive in there, and you'd get a lot better performance. But so no, I don't know. You might search for a smart utility for Macintosh. There might be a free one out there. As I said, my experience is Smart's not that smart. I don't find it that useful. And then Micromat makes a tool called Tech Tool Pro, micromat.com. But by the time you get to buying it, you could buy a new hard drive for that price. I think it's 70 or 80 bucks. So it's kind of hard to recommend software of this kind, because often nowadays hard drives are so cheap, you just might as well let it fail. One more suggestion: the company that made the hard drive, whether it's Seagate or Western Digital, Hitachi, Apple uses a lot of Hitachi drives, may have software online that you can download that will do diagnostics. Often that's the case. The problem is, what is the smart stuff going to say? It's going to say, it's fine. It's fine until it breaks. Peter in Escondido, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Peter.
Yeah, hi. I've been getting this thing on my internet. It says certificate of error.
Yeah.
And to clear it, they said to get rid of this web page, click here, and I've been afraid to. And then it disappears, then comes back again.
Yeah, so the way we do secure connections on your bank, on your e-commerce, and Amazon is with certificates. That's what says this site is the site it says it is and establishes an encrypted connection. So that's why you're getting a warning. If that certificate that you're getting from the site is out of date, if it's expired or revoked, then it's risky to use that site. What is the site you're going to?
It was YouTube.
You should not be getting an expired certificate for YouTube.
I know, and that's what I think was really weird.
First thing I would do is check the date and time on your computer. Almost certainly, it's wrong.
Okay.
When your computer dies, the battery dies on it, and it probably thinks it's in 1960 or 1904 if it's a PC. And if it is, well, of course, the certificate is out of date.
Okay, and what was happening, I was getting this problem, and my friend told me to backdate it, get rid of it so I could go back to you.
No, don't do that.
Oh, don't backdate?
Don't do that. That doesn't make the certificate any more valid. I would just make sure you have the accurate date and time zone on your computer.
Okay.
Yeah, you fix that, and I bet you that certificate will go away. I can tell you for sure YouTube does not have an expired certificate.
Okay.
Now, the other thing is make sure you have the latest version of your browser. So every time you update your browser, you'll update your certificate authorities, and that's important to have up-to-date certificate authorities. It is possible. In fact, YouTube, I bet you, was bit by this Heartbleed bug that was a problem about a month ago.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the solutions, if you had a site that had logins, is to revoke your certificate, because that may have been leaked. You don't want people posing as YouTube if they're not. Would be to revoke the certificate and get a new one issued. And if you have an out-of-date certificates in your browser, then the browser's going to say, whoa, I don't know what's going on here. So I would, but I'm almost always, it's a case, it's just the bad date and time. Reset the date and time. If you need to reboot the computer, I bet it'll go away. If you haven't updated your browser lately, do that. You should do that anyway. The browser is the most important thing to keep up to date on your system because it's the one that's on the front lines. It's on the internet. And that's risky. Now, if you still get that error, look carefully at the certificate that you're seeing and make sure it comes from YouTube, that it's an actual YouTube certificate. If it comes from a third party, it's possible that you actually have a man-in-the-middle attack going on. Somebody's gotten into your router or some, you know, your internet connection and is posing as YouTube. That would be bad. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Ba-ba-da-bum. Almost always when I see that, it's because your clock is wrong. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Steve in San Diego, you're next. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Leo.
How
long
are you?
Time. Enjoyed the show.
Thank you.
I've got two or three discs of legacy Palm ebooks, PDB files, and I need something to translate them into Windows 7, but ideally to Mac if there's a reader or something like that.
I wonder if Calibre will do that. They're ebooks?
Yes. Well, their PDB is a file extension, so I've got fiction, nonfiction, all kinds of stuff.
So let me look. This is a really great ebook kind of management tool called Calibre with a B-R-E, not a B-E-R at the end. Calibre-ebook.com. And it does exactly what you just described. It will convert one ebook format to another ebook format.
Does this do one file at a time and I pay $5 each time? Because I may as well go buy the books new from Apple.
It's free.
Oh, wow.
It's free.
That's a blessing. Yes.
Let me see. The conversion section here. Let's see what formats it'll do. I mean, it does more formats than anything I've ever seen. This is so many formats, I don't know. It does every format. And once you've converted it into a standard format, like EPUB or Mobi or whatever, you just then import it into whatever platform you want to use. A lot of people I know use this to create ebooks, to convert ebooks and all of that stuff.
Okay, I'll take a look at it.
I don't see, I'm looking for a list of files it supports, but that's an odd file, so it may not support that. But it's certainly a good place to start, and because it's free, and it'll do batch files and all that, I think it's a good place to start.
Okay, very good. Appreciate the information.
My pleasure. Everybody should own this. If you do a lot of ebooks, it's a really great tool to have. Susan in Chatsworth, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Susan.
Hi. Thanks to you, I signed on with DSL Extreme a few years ago, and lately I've been having a little problem with them showing me an error message when I go to get my emails. I have another question besides this. I'm wondering if you would quickly know me what I could do about that.
What's the error message you're getting?
It doesn't really give me any particular thing. It just says there's been an error. And it's kind of slow, so I'm thinking maybe just to, close
well,
it
down. DSL Extreme uses Gmail. Are you using a mail program, or are you just doing this on the web to get there?
I'm just doing it. My email is with Internet Explorer.
Yeah. So you're using it. Try another browser. Go to google.com/Chrome.
Outlook Express is what I use.
Oh, you're using Outlook Express. That's way out of date. Microsoft stopped supporting that about 5 years ago.
Oh, okay.
So you want to go, what version of Windows are you using?
It's XP.
XP, that's what I thought. Well, we have a lot of issues here now, Susan, because...
should I just get another computer?
Well, I hate to say that, because that's a lot of money just to get email. But Microsoft stopped supporting XP last month.
And
you probably heard us talk a lot about that.
Uh-huh.
That means XP is a little bit dangerous to use. There are ways to use it. I would absolutely, under no circumstances, use Internet Explorer on XP.
Oh, okay.
So that's the first thing to stop right now, mostly because you're using not just an old operating system, but now a very old version of IE.
Right.
And there are lots of exploits for IE, many of which you're vulnerable to. Mm-hmm. So first thing I would do is, I don't know if you can do this, but if you go to get.live.com, that's Microsoft's software spot, you can get, I think you can, but I'm not sure if XP will support it, but I would try Windows Live Mail. That is their replacement for Outlook Express.
Uh-huh.
Outlook Express is ancient also.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so you're using a number of programs that haven't been updated in quite a while.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, if I bought a new computer, what do you recommend if it's...
Is it just email and surfing that you do?
I have to check in with my doctor on the internet. But
yeah. You know, believe it or not, I think for people who don't have, whose needs are few, a Samsung Chromebook would be a good choice. And we're talking about $250-$300, not too much.
Uh huh.
It's automatically kept up to date. It's highly secure. Now, it's not great if you're doing video editing. It doesn't sound like you are.
No.
If you're
nothing
doing
fancy.
Yeah, if you're just, most of what you do is in a browser, this is a great solution for you.
Okay. Now, I have DSL Extreme, and they only will continue with me if I have an AT&T phone line. Do you know any alternatives?
Yeah, this is an issue not with DSL Extreme, but it just the life of an independent internet service provider. You have to ride on the phone line of whoever the incumbent carrier is. And your neighborhood is, I gather it's AT&T. Who are you going to change to? Is there another company you can get phone service from?
I could get Verizon or somebody else, probably even something through Dish Network that I have my
In many cases, these aren't real phone systems, and they expect you to get internet in addition to the phone because your phone system actually is riding on the internet.
Yeah.
So DSL Extreme can only support the guys who own that copper wire that's going into your house, in which case that's AT&T.
Well, AT&T charges me $40 a month for absolutely nothing.
I agree.
Yeah.
So you might be looking at a change in internet service provider. If you got Fios, for instance, from Verizon, you'd have to use Verizon as your phone company and your internet company. You don't have the option.
Okay. Well, what other internet company would you recommend?
Well, it's very dependent on where you are and what you can get. We don't live in a world...
How would I find that out? It's in the Chatsworth area.
You can try calling those companies and say, here's my... Or even going online. Many of them have you enter in your address and they'll say whether they support you or not.
Verizon?
Check. If Verizon may offer Fios in your area, if they do, FIOS, that's a very good choice. It's very fast internet.
Uh-huh.
They can do...
Is it as reasonable as DSL?
It's much more expensive.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And it's more expensive than AT&T, too. Yeah. The nice thing about DSL Extreme is they're affordable, but you have to ride on a phone line, and the phone line may not be cheap.
No, it's not. My cell phone is separate from my phone.
You know who might be able to help you with this? DSL Extreme themselves. They could probably tell you what other carriers they can support in your neighborhood.
Oh, I see.
And the other thing you can ask them is, can I get dry loop service? Usually you can. That means I don't want phone service. I just want internet.
Okay, dry loop service.
Yeah. If AT&T will sell you dry loop, then you can go somewhere else. You can say, I'm going to have somebody else's phone service because then it doesn't matter. You're still getting that copper that's in your house that was put there by AT&T 180 years ago. That's still there. And DSL Extreme can use it. Yeah, so call DSL Extreme and say, can I get dry loop service? I'd like to try. They should help you. They want to keep you as a customer, right?
Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
Also, if I'm buying a new computer, would I want Windows 7 or 8? I know there are people...
Well, no. That's why I'm saying get a Chromebook. It's not a Windows computer.
Oh, okay.
It's much simpler, much more secure. And it's very affordable. Samsung currently makes the nicest ones, the Samsung Chromebook. Acer, Samsung, Asus, there are lots of companies that make them. They're very good, very secure, highly recommended. If your needs are simple, and they are, this is a much better choice for you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by my buddies, Hover.com. When you've got to get a new domain name, I know there's those other guys. Everybody talks about the other guys. You know, there's lots of different places you can go to get a domain name. This is the one. I moved all my domains over to Hover.com several years ago. I've been very happy because their management's great. Their domain management system is the best. But they're also the easiest way to register new domain names. I just did the other day. You probably, if you were watching our live feed, I got a bunch of new domains from Hover.com. Whether you're looking for the best place to register a domain name, to run your domain management, to do email, Hover's great geeks, developers, designers, programmers, they all love Hover because they know they'll have the best tools and support. Simple, clean service. You don't have a lot of upselling. You don't have any upselling because they're not trying to sell you a bunch of other stuff. You don't have to be an expert to get a domain. It's easy to use, and they have wonderful phone support. No hold, no wait, no transfer phone service. If you call during business hours, a live person who's empowered to fix it will help you. They're not going to put you on hold and say, well, they've got to go ask somebody. No, they can do it all. Everything you need comes with your domain name, no more, no less, including a custom email, smart control panel, so you can do what you want with your domain with a click of a button. I use that all the time. And Whois privacy is built in, free on every domain. They got Google Apps, too. It's probably the easiest way to do it. I love Hover. You will, too. Pick a domain name, register it. They've got that new .club TLD. Have you seen that one? If you've got a book club, the Johnny Jet Fan Club, you get johnnyjetfan.club. You see what I'm saying? I love it. Hover.com. If you decide to buy, make sure you enter the promo code TTG6, and you'll get 10% off your first purchase. Hover! They're best! Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Hey, guess who's here? My friend, my buddy, the Giz Whiz, Mad Magazine's maddest writer for these many a year. And he's here every week to talk gadgets with us. Hi, Dickie D.
How are you?
I'm great. I see you've been doing inflatable gadgets on your podcast with Chad.
Yes, Chad is doing inflatable. God knows what he'll have toward the end of the month.
He's running. Is he running low?
No, well, we just did the first one, an inflatable phone case in case you drop your
I'm looking at Chad's desk, and he's got, well, I don't even want to say. You'll find out. It'll be a surprise. Think of it that way.
Exactly. Exactly.
What are you bringing us today?
Well, you know what? This is such a neat gadget, and the most technology for the money, certainly. If you're a biker and you're a show-off, I'm talking a pedal bike, there, over the years, we've seen a lot of these little gadgets that you attach to the back wheel, and as you pedal, it'll make designs.
Wait a minute. Designs? You mean like the wheel looks like little patterns and stuff?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's like when I was a kid. You'd put tape in the wheel and it'd do a spiral or...
Well, this is LED, so it's beautiful, right?
Ooh, fancy.
And Fuse, F-U-Z-E, had for a long time a thing called Wheel Writer, W-R-I-T-E-R. But now they came out with Wheel Writer 2.0. So
well,
not
that's
only
gotta
can
be better,
Leo, it is. It sounds like a joke, but it's way. There are 64 built-in designs in the wheel. Controller itself. However, if you have a recent iPhone or iPad Touch, you download the free app and you design.
You can program it?
To program it. Also, it comes with a little adapter so that the wheel can be showing the speed you're pedaling at.
Oh, that's neat.
Yes. And the price, Leo, it's under $20.
Oh, every kid should have this.
This is really neat. I saw it at a little event called Time to Play, and I said to the woman, $69. She said, no, $19.99.
Well, they're selling it to kids. I mean, you can't make it too expensive, right?
No, exactly. Yeah. But it's still a lot of technology for the money.
Yeah.
It comes with the little cable you need after
Wait a minute. This is cool. So I misunderstood. I thought like maybe there was a speedometer on the handle. You're saying it will show on the wheel as you go by how fast you're going.
Yes, the LEDs light up your current speed.
Like, you could say, officer, look at the wheel. I'm going 14 miles an hour.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
It is very clever. And you know, obviously,
I'm getting this right now.
Because the device has LEDs at one side. At this price, you could get two of them and then have designs on both sides of your bike. But you can do your own animation on the screen on your iOS device.
I love this.
And then it comes with a little cable that plugs into the device on your bike. And then you just download the designs and then you pick them. And as you pedal, you have your custom-made designs or one of theirs.
The only thing that worries me is that you kind of have to do this at night, right?
Yeah, oh yeah. It's really...
So that's a little...
Well, you're probably not going to get struck by a car. Because
well, that's true. Everybody can see you coming.
They're sure
right?
going to see you wow. coming. Yeah.
Well, maybe I'll get a couple and put them on my bike and just ride around in the cul-de-sac.
Yeah.
Annoy the neighbors. Or, you know,
go at dusk when it's not blazing sun. You'll see
okay,
it.
Okay, you'll see it, right? Yeah.
See it. Exactly.
Boy, they should put these on cars. Then it would make the cops' life much easier.
Oh,
that guy's going 80 miles an hour. It says so on his bumper.
All he needs is his cell phone camera. Yeah, I know how fast you were going. There's your own wheel.
Now
your
I
own
have a
as 91 you, miles an hour.
As you know, I have a trike, so I could actually have three of these.
You could. You could be a moving billboard.
I just ordered two of them. I love this idea. I really love this idea. I will make a video and send it to you.
Okay, great. And we'll do it on Gizwiz.
Yeah, the Wheel Rider 2 from Fuse. I just got it from Amazon. It's on Amazon, but you can also get it from the Fuse
website. Yeah, great.
Thank you, Dickie D. Stick around. We're going to do a Gizfiz a little later today. We have a triangulation and then an hour later. So we're at about 3:30 Pacific, 6:30 your time.
Oh, okay.
Okay, a little earlier. I thought it was going to be a little later, but Dick has so much fun. I don't know how many of you know who listen to the radio show, but he wrote the Match Game for years. They do Match Game questions. Do you use old questions or do you make up new ones?
Both. I use a lot of old questions, and I give the dates that I wrote them. You know, they're like 30,
fun.
40 years old. Yeah. And then we have
fun.
Someone who makes up questions for the chat. It's a lot of fun.
Give me an example so that the radio audience who maybe has never seen you do this can know what to expect.
Oh, I only have it on my computer now, but I wrote one for this afternoon show. Dumb Donald was so dumb, the computer he built is powered by a blank chip.
Potato.
Chocolate.
It's easy. That's how much fun it is. So stay tuned for the GizWiz. And don't forget the GizWiz website, gizwiz.biz, where you can play the What the Heck Is It contest, win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine from that guy.
Oh, yes.
Right,
and the new cover is up there. You can see what issue you're going to get if you win.
Is it the July, August? Is it the August?
It's the September? August issue, exactly.
The August issue. Or as sometimes we say it, the August
Magazine.
The August issue.
Nothing August about our magazine.
Oh,
trust
look
me
at this. Got a monster on the cover. Kim and Kanye's marriage. I love it. All right. So you're playing for an autographed copy of that. That's a collectible. All you have to do is identify a close-up picture of a gadget or a doodad. And if you, it doesn't have to be right. In fact, there's more chance to win if it's wrong. Let's just put it that way. Gizwiz.biz. Thanks, Dickie D. Stick around. We'll do the GizFizz a little later on. And, of course, you can tune in for the GizWiz podcast every Wednesday evening on this very same podcast network. I think we have time for one more call here. So let's talk to Tom in Yorba Linda, California. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Leo. I'm old enough to remember when we put playing cards with clothespins.
Yeah. And it would sound like a motor almost. Yeah.
Sometimes a balloon would sound even better.
I think kids still do that, but this one's cool. This one sounds really cool.
Anyway, I'm blocked out of my Hotmail. I've had the account for years. Suddenly I get this message last night that I'm blocked out. My account's no longer active. I followed all their prompts, put in all my information, and they tell me, well, you're not giving us enough information.
Is it blocked because they don't recognize the password, or have you lost it due to inactivity?
They don't recognize password. I've used each option. If I've even tried, okay, I'm going to set up a new account. If you're not going to recognize this, then I'm going to set up a new account.
So they say, what they say is, well, I see you've entered something, but it's not the password.
Correct.
That's concerning because you didn't change it, did you?
No, I didn't. And then they ask me to send it to another computer, so I send it to my wife, but they give me the same information to fill out as if I was going to do it on my own laptop, so it doesn't really do any good. They don't send me anything extra that I... Is there anyone I can call?
Yeah, you can call Microsoft. I mean, it is a free email service, so it's support on free services tends to be... You know, inexpensive, yeah. But it does. I'm worried that you might have gotten hacked, frankly.
Yeah,
what sometimes happens, a lot of times when a hacker hacks your email, they don't change the password because they want you to keep using it because they can mine all sorts of useful information. But once that password, but if they decide they want to take it over, then they might change the password. I think you're going to have to call Microsoft, and there should be a support number somewhere on that site. And I think you're going to have to walk through it with them. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.